Excellent. So, hi guys and girls. My name is Nir Ben Tzvi. I'm a program manager on the file server team in Windows Server. And with me is Fabian Uze, which is also a program manager on the file server team. Now, there's two things that I want to tell you. One is a bad thing, one is a good thing. The bad thing is that right now for me, it's 6 a.m. in the morning. So, and I really, really tried not to get it that way, but, you know, I can't avoid nature. So if I fall asleep during the talk, please wake me up with the, you know, you can clap always. And the good thing is that you have the number one world expert here in work folders, client UX, which is Fabian, which designed it all. Like everything you're seeing in the client, that's Fabian. So you cannot say in the final evaluation that the speaker didn't know his stuff because he did the thing. So, but we are from the Windows Server product group that actually designed and implemented this solution. And it took us, usually a server release takes us about 3 years. Okay, this was done in 8 months. So we really took a very serious feedback from our customers that wanted to enable some very crucial scenarios, and we walk through them and talk about it. If this ever changes. So we'll talk about what work folders is in this presentation. There is another presentation that's a deep dive, so I'll keep it high level. And then I'll also take questions during the presentation, so feel free to raise your hand. Anybody has a question up to now? Okay. I have a question. How many of you guys are IT architects or administrators? All right, so I'm in the right place. Okay, so let's start talking about work folders. Work folders is part of the what we call people-centric IT, and this is all about allowing IT to enable users. So the problem set that we're seeing in the market is very simple. People are bringing their own devices to work. People want to work wherever they are on their devices. What do people do in order to do that? Of course, it's not secure, it's not compliant, and so on. What do people do? They put their files on SkyDrive or on Dropbox or somewhere else. Because no matter what we tell them about making sure that the files and data is secure so that you can protect it against leakage and so that you can back it up, they need to do their work. They have all their devices, and they're going to do it no matter what you tell them. So we find ourselves in a situation where the corporate data is not in the corporate. It's somewhere in the cloud, on public networks, and it's on desktop devices or other devices that can be stolen and not protected. Now, if you feel bad about it, don't feel bad about it. The reason that you shouldn't feel bad about it is that, now I've been working on security and data management for the last 7 years, and I keep bumping into these military guys that keep different networks secure, and they have the secret network and the non-secret network and so on, and they have army personnel that if they do something wrong, they're going to either, you know, fire them in the best case scenario, or, you know, trial them as traitors in the worst case scenario. And we don't shoot people yet. So these guys still have the same problems of people taking files from the secret network and putting it in the unrestricted network. The reason they do it is because they need to do their work. If they don't do their work, they're not going to be productive, and they're going to end up getting fired or worse. All right, so anybody has this problem in their environment? Okay, I don't see a lot of hands, so it means that only a few people has the problem, so I'm going to talk only to these few people. All right, so come on. Clicker work. Anybody has file servers on their environment? Okay, SharePoint. Excellent. So, by the way, I've been asking this question again for years, and everybody has both. And I love SharePoint. I also love file servers. And I want to tell you a little bit about file servers. File server in Windows 2000 or Windows 2003 was a great tool, very, very convenient with price and what it did for that price. But you could only put, say, I don't know, 200 gigabytes, maybe, you know, half a terabyte. So File Server 2012 and 2012 R2 has the same characteristic. It stayed with the same price. But all other stuff has completely changed. You can put terabytes and terabytes of data on a file server. It's very, very performant. You can run SQL Server using SMB. You can run Hyper-V using SMB. Anybody saw demos with Hyper-V over SMB? Okay, so you know I'm telling the truth. For the same price, you get deduplication on the file server. Anybody saw that demo? Okay, so this is a mean machine, all right? And we run file servers in Microsoft and multiple terabytes of data. Bing Maps is running on this stuff. And this is something that can go head-to-head with any NAS device out there. And I love the NAS devices as well, but file server is definitely something you should consider when you look at the price performance characteristics. We had huge innovative leaps such as deduplication, dynamic access control, performance has improved significantly to actually bypass many of the other offerings. And that's why I love file servers. So when we looked at the problem set and we looked at the market, we saw that there is a considerable amount of people that use file servers and need a solution to be able to support the users using file servers. So we added sync on top of file servers in this release. So it took us 8 months of very, very hard work. And the way we kind of think about scenarios when we develop them in Windows Server is first and foremost, we think about quality. So that's we have to deliver in quality. Then we have to deliver to a certain time. So the way we kind of work through that is we say, what are the most important scenarios that we want our customers to be able to use from day one as we ship the product? And then we go and build that so we can fit it in a year and with the quality. You know, previous releases, we had 3 years releases. We stayed with the same quality, but we deliver in less than 3 years. I won't tell you why. I think it's public that we said until the end of this year. So it's obviously less than 3 years because we delivered 2012 in September last year. So what did we do on the file server? To enable you guys to allow your users to sync from any device, wherever they are, the work data, but still keeping the data also on the file server and allowing you to apply compliance and backup and e-discovery and all these kind of things on the back end on the file servers. What did we build? We built an extension of the file server so that you can use all the technologies that are already on the file server. You can just use them on this new sync data that is coming from desktops. Now, how many of you guys have files on desktops that you can't control today? All right. I hear your pain. This is one way to control data on desktops for your users. And they would love to use it. The reason they would love to use it is that they have their data synced on all their devices. So when I get a new device at Microsoft, I just got one, I go ahead and configure it to join the domain, and that's it. I get all my data. I don't need to do anything else. And I have 3 devices. So when I go home, all my data is on the home device as well. It's very simple. I like to use it because it gives me value as the user. We also added the enterprise angle, so all data is encrypted on the devices. We require a certain amount of, password policy on the devices. All this stuff that's seamless to the user, we just do with work folders. And last but not least, we keep it simple. So, we don't want to invent something new. We see SkyDrive working nicely. We see Dropbox working nicely. You know, we see SkyDrive Pro working nicely. So we just use the same model. You have your work data in a folder on your machine. You drop any document or file there. We just sync it up to the file server and to all other machines. So it's just a folder for you to put in your work data there. And think about the concept. Now you can actually differentiate between a user's work data and a user's personal data. So you can do stuff only on the user's work data. This is a pretty powerful concept as we move to the future. And you saw in the keynote, and everybody saw in the keynote how we wiped only the work data? Yeah, so you saw that. That's like, okay, now we can wipe the work data. We don't need to touch the personal data. So that concept is going to lead us as we move forward with this kind of solution set. All right, what's not in work folders? This is very, very important. As I said, we focused only on the main scenarios. So what's not there? One, of course, we don't want people to put, it's not a consumer cloud solution. The second thing is that it is not running in the cloud. It's running on-premise. So it's using your file servers that you set up. It's not a cloud solution, it's on-premise. So you need to publish it. This is not about collaboration or sharing. If you want that, there is a great solution called SharePoint. This is about taking the desktop data, putting it on the file server that you like and want to extend. And one thing that we didn't get into this release is that you can just go and click on any share, let's say your department share, let's say you're a salesperson and you have some demos in some shares, you can't click on it and say sync this. We know this is something important, and we're going to make sure that we'll consider that for future releases. Any questions up to now? Yes, please. So the question was, when you remove the user from where? From the, like, Intune?
Yes.
So if you use Intune, for example, to unenroll the user, to remove him, right? If you use any, Intune is an example, which we're integrated with, but if there are other mechanisms, other MDMs, you know, device management solutions that are also using the same capabilities, then if you remove the user, the data on the device would, first of all, be invalid immediately, and also we would also delete it from the device. Yes, please.
If you drag that data outside of that folder, will you remove that data from outside of the workflow?
So the question was, what happens, and you know, you're getting ahead of ourselves, but the question was, what happens if I take the data and I say, oh, no, this is not work data, I'll just remove it and put it somewhere else, then this action would be synchronized to all other devices. So if you decided this document is your grocery list and you don't want it there, then we would remove it from all devices. So it's a complete sync solution. Now, you guys must think that I'm crazy because there's SkyDrive Pro, there's SkyDrive, and now we're talking about work folders. So we wanted you to know that we are actually talking to the SkyDrive Pro and the SkyDrive team. It's not something that we did in a vacuum. We saw that the market, you guys, came and told us, no, we like it that there is SkyDrive Pro and we can use it in the cloud. We like it that there is SkyDrive Pro, you can use it with SharePoint, but some of us want to just use our file servers that has this scale and price performance capabilities and all these data management capabilities. We want to be able to use the file servers to store our desktop data. You know, if I have a petabyte of data on the desktop, I can choose to put it in the cloud with SkyDrive Pro and get the collaboration, but I can also choose to put it on-prem on my file servers. That's your choice. A lot of people wanted to have that choice. That's why we built work folders. If the feedback was, oh, we're just going to use SkyDrive Pro, then we wouldn't have built work folders. So This slide is your fault, it's not ours. Right? And I'm also showing this slide because there's another solution that a lot of people are already using. Home folders and client-side caching and folder redirection. How many of you guys are using home folders? Okay, and how many are using client-side caching and folder redirection? All right, so obviously you're using it on file servers, and if you're using it on file servers, then this is something that, work folder is something you want to consider. Now, what I missed mentioning, and I just remembered, and it's very important, work folders in this release is only available for local storage on the file server. So you can still have a petabyte of data, but it needs to be local. You can have a SAN or a DAS that connects storage, or an iSCSI that connects storage to the file server, but it does not support the storage being on another NAS device. So if your work folders, let's say, for example, today your home folders is on a NetApp or EMC, then you need to, if you want to use work folders, you need to migrate that data to a file server. That's another piece of feedback that we already heard, and we know we want to deal with sometime in the future. Yes, please. The question was, which client is work folders going to support? That's a great question. We're going to answer it in a few slides. Okay? Excellent. So now we're going to show you how work folders looks like on the client.
All right. Thank you, Nir. So what we're looking at here is we're looking at two virtual machines running on my laptop, and we're trying to follow the day of Paul. Paul is a finance guy. He works in finance, and he's an avid user of new technology. So he frequently brings in his newest toys to work, and he tries to get work done on it. So he really wants to have his work files on him. And he uses whatever means necessary to get them on there. So we want to help ourselves as IT administrators, and we want to help Paul to get to his goal in a way that is beneficial to the both of us, or to all of us. And on this first PC on the right-hand side here, you can see this is Paul's office PC. This is a domain join PC where group policy has already deployed work folders for him. So there's nothing Paul needs to do manually. This is built into every Windows client SKU as well as every Windows server SKU. And you're going to be able to, with the help of group policy, provision it to every user that is having a domain join PC. So we're already looking at his Office PC. He already is using work folders, so there are some files in his work folder here. And now we want to look at what happens when he brings in his Surface, which is his newest toy. So he wants to use the Surface for work, and he wants to find out how do I, with a Surface that I can't domain join, how do I enable myself to get the work files there. So in a very simple, you saw this probably this morning with Adam Hall presenting this part of the demo in a slightly different angle from Intune perspective. But if he wants to, if there is no Intune on this device yet, or if you're using a different mobile device management solution, you can go to, or all Paul needs to do is to go to control panel, and we can type either work folders, or we can, if we don't want to use statpath, we can go to system and security, and we can find work folders right here. So it is a built-in feature. It's nothing that you need to install in an XE or an MSI from somewhere else. It's built into Windows. So with a very quick wizard, Paul is going to be able to set this up on his machine. So all he needs to do, and you've probably seen this a couple of times, all Paul needs to do is enter his work email address. That's the only kind type of information he needs to have, and he always has because he remembers his email address. So there's no very complicated configuration story or you having to interact with Paul to enable him to do this on this specific device. You just have to enable him to use work folders at all. And he can choose to join devices as he sees fit. So with that little email entry and the click on next, what I actually did in the background is we went and looked up the file server that Paul stores his data on. So in the background, the discovery process is going on that finds through a reverse proxy, but Nir is going to talk a little bit about more about how that actually works. He finds the file server that this particular user, Paul, stores his work folders or his files, and now has found all the configuration and set that up in the background, so there is nothing for you and nothing for Paul to do any more than stepping to the rest of these little wizard pages. So this particular page here is interesting for Paul if he uses, let's say, a Surface RT where he has a space-constrained hard drive and he wants to use an SD card instead to put his work folders on. So there is a variety of scenarios where you want to change the location where the work folders on this particular machine are going to be stored. So in this, we just use the default and move on to the next screen. So the next screen talks about security policies. We've all learned this morning, and Nir iterated over it, how important it is for us as IT administrators to keep the data safe. We allow work folders or work files to come onto devices we don't have immediate control over. So we want to have a minimum of control. And we just want to be sure that we keep those files safe. So the first policy up here is basically encryption at rest. Then there is a requirement for you to have a lock screen password, and there is a requirement that the lock screen kicks in after once in a while. So Paul already has that set on his Surface, so there is no pop-up or no nothing that would happen right now. But if he wouldn't, he couldn't set that up until he clicks the button that enables his Surface to have a lock screen password. So we accept these policies, and we click on Set Up Work Folders. So what happens as we speak when we click that button is, in the background, this work, this file synchronization partnership, however you want to call this, with the server has been established. And if I click on Close here, we actually open the work folder location for the user so he can see his files. And because it's very few files, they already synced down. So now Paul has work folders enabled on his Surface, and in just a snap got all his work files here. And they're secure, safe, and compliant to policies you might have in your, and regulations you might have in your own company. With that, I'm going to give it back to Nir.
That's perfect, Fabian. Thank you. So I'm just going to have an insert here for the deep dive session tomorrow. It's going to explain all about how this all works with the automatic discovery and so on. We'll go through it, but not as deep as the deep dive session. And, you know, Adam and Jen sitting in the back, I heard that they're also giving out some prizes to people that will be able to see what different demos they're doing versus what we're doing. So pay close attention. All right. Getting back to work folders, let's just review the logical component of what work folders are built from. So we saw on the file server, we have a file server with a work folder's new sub role actually, and it has all the sync activity going on to that file server, and you're able to see who synced what, when, and also you're able to configure who syncs to which file server. Then we also introduced the concept of sync shares. So much like we have SMB shares and FS shares, we're now introducing a concept of sync shares. It could go to the same location as the SMB share, or it could go to a different folder. But the idea is that when you want to sync users, let's say you have the sales department and the finance department, you don't want them all to sync to the same place. So you can define sync shares for which each one of these groups, for example, and you can have multiple groups, and you can have each one sync to a different chair with different quotas, with different policies on it, and so on and so on. So you have that capability. Let's say you want to have a file server with 5,000 users syncing to it, you might have 10 different groups of people syncing to different locations. So this is why we kind of came up with a sync share concept, and it maps nicely to the SMB share. Then, of course, we have the devices where files are going to be consistently stored across or synced across all devices. And very important, this also works if the device accesses through SMB. So remember I talked about home folders, right? In home folder, the device accesses through SMB, the share itself. So let's say you have one device that uses home folders. Let's say it's an XP machine or a Vista machine. And then we have another device that's a home surface machine that accesses through sync. The way this all works is that we look at where you store files, either on the server or on the clients, and we sync between all of these. So a device accessing through SMB on the server would actually be picked up as a change that would also get synced to all other devices. That's how we kind of keep everything syncing together. And we look at all these sync locations on the devices and on the server as folders that we need to sync with. So it's a completely different concept than what you know about CSC and FR. To the user, it's just a folder that he can access, and then we pick up the changes and make sure everything is synced together. Questions? Yes, please. So the question was about devices, and I think that the next slide answers that. Absolutely. So let's talk about which devices we are supporting. So this is a very simple server deployment, just to kind of walk you through the concept. On the left, we have the devices. As you can see, it's not only Windows devices. So when we ship Windows Server 2012 R2 and Windows 8.1, we are going to support, of course, Windows 8.1, desktops, Surface, Pros, and what have you. But we know that without devices, other devices support, this would be very hard for you and your users to be able to use. So in priority order, we're also planning to ship Windows 7, support on Windows 7, support on iPads, and support on Androids. So XP we currently don't plan to support unless we get feedback that this is crucial. But right now, the feedback that we collected is Windows 7, iPads, and Androids. And then we'll probably need to look also at the form factors. Yes, question. So the question was, what about Windows Phone? As I said, Windows Phone factors, we'll need to look at that as well. And what we plan to do is look at whether it needs to be only a read experience, or it needs to be read-write, and so on. There's several things that we're thinking about, but the most important, the way we're kind of focusing is let's enable all the users and their devices that they use for work to actually work on the data, not just view it, and then move on to the other devices. And of course, we're very happy to change our opinion if we get feedback. Yes, back there. What about Macs? Yeah, that's another thing that we will look at. It's a great, we get that feedback as well, and it's great feedback. So we'll look at that as well. But right now, what we kind of have booked that we're thinking of doing is Windows 7, iPads, and then looking at Androids. Sorry? That's a great question. What are the timelines? So we don't have concrete timelines yet. It will be close to GA, to general availability of the other parts. All right, so The next part that I want you to look at is how do we publish the file servers? As I said, these are not in the cloud. So it's either in your organization or it's running as an IaaS and you want to be able to publish it. You can use a web proxy, a reverse proxy to publish it, or you can use IP publishing, whatever you'd like, in order to get the server, to get the data from the client to the server. You can, of course, also put a leg of the server on the internet, but that would be less optimal than what we would like you to do. The devices that can access the sync, as you saw, we have some policies around that. So does the device have a password? Should I encrypt on the device? Is the device registered? Who saw in the keynote demo how Adam tried to access the SharePoint website and got a refusal with, you need to register. So same thing, you can say only registered devices can access work folders. That's what we do in Microsoft, for example, in our Salesforce. You have to register your device in order to be able to access our work folders server. Question here. The question was, can you do that if you don't have Intune? The answer is yes. You saw that registering a device and enrolling it to management are two different steps. So you can do that, yes. All right. So we did that on the client side. On the server side, it's just a folder, right? Folder for each user. So now we can do all the data management on this folder. We can do quotas, we can do file classification, we can do RMS protection, we can do auditing, we can do reporting. You know, if you want to see what's the distribution of iBusiness Impact data on your desktops, you can do that. If you want to be able to see what types of files are on your desktop, you can do that. If you want to send emails to users, don't put, images on your work data. You can also do that. All this stuff that just works on the file server for a long, long time, you can just do using, you can now do on your desktop data. Question back there. I can't hear you, sorry. So the question was, how does the iPad connect to the domain? It doesn't need to connect to the domain. That's the nice thing about work folders, that you basically support both domain joined machines and non-domain joined machines. So your iPad doesn't need to be connected to the domain at all. And if you required registered devices, then ADFS supports registering iPads. So you don't need to connect anything to the domain in order to use work folders. This is for both domain joined devices and devices that are non-domain joined or devices that are at home and so on. You can use that. The information worker can use work folders wherever they are and on any device that they're using. It's a good question, though. I didn't cover it. Authentication. We can use Windows Authentication. You can use Kerberos, Digest, for if you're coming from outside of the organization. And then you can also use ADFS as well. So you can choose between Windows, Digest, and ADFS. What Fabian will show us now is how does the IT administrator configure that on the server. And before he starts the demo, one of the things that we really focused on for the IT administrators and for the end user is actually we focused on three things. One is make it simple, and the other two is make it simple as well. We really wanted to make sure that this is simple for the end user, and it is as simple for the IT administrator. Actually, to really show that, and I don't know how much you guys know about our sales guys and product marketing guys, how technical they are. Okay. We had the product marketing guy build his own demo for the keynote. That's how much we trusted this. So whatever you saw working in the keynote, we didn't help him. He got it all by himself. So it is simple to use. He can verify that one. That's our kind of model. If he can use it, everybody else can use it. All right.
You're giving Adam really good credit.
Adam, I hope you're not in the room.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Great. So what we would like to look at right now is how is this going to be configured, how is this looking on the server, and how is this going to be configured on the server. And as Nir said, it's simple times three. So we're trying to make it as intuitive as we can. So I mentioned earlier that workfolders is a feature of every file server of any Windows server SKU. So in order to enable workfolders on a file server, all you would have to do is you would have to go to Server Manager, which is the primary and the only tool that you would need to use for the mainline scenarios. There is a bunch of other tools you would need to use as well. But Server Manager has the add remove roads wizard where you can control which features and which roads are installed on your server. And I have that open here. And under the File and Storage Services note, you can find work folders down here. So it's already installed. I just opened that to show you guys where you can find it under File and Storage Services up there. So once that is enabled, what that gets us is this little nice new work folders canvas. So Nia talked a little bit about sync shares. This is the primary object everything pivots around in this canvas. So a sync share is essentially comparable to an SMB share. So the primary object here is a list of all the sync shares. And as if we were to pick different sync shares here, we would see related objects to the sync share appear down here. I can see which users have access to that sync share. I can see what volume is it on, what's the amount of space I have provisioned for work folders. Am I going to run out of space here? I can also, if I have any quotas provisioned, auto quotas, for instance, for every folder that is being created for every user. So all of that is right at your fingertips and is going to be sorted in a way that you can instantly feel familiar if you are familiar with the rest of storage management on Server Manager. So we talked a little bit about Paul. And Paul can be sometimes a little bit of a troublemaker. So he might call you and ask, well, something isn't actually going right. And you can easily find out what's happening with Paul. So you can go into the list of users that have access to the sync share that you're looking at. You can filter it for Paul or for the user calling you. And with a simple click on the properties page, you'll be able to see some of the most basic properties of Paul all around his identity and where he's what security group he's a part of, and if he may be blocked for sync usage due to whatever reason. And first and foremost, down here, you have a list of devices that we have listed or that are actually syncing with Paul's data. So down here, we can actually see his Surface that we just joined to a few moments ago. And if there were a problem, that problem would be visible right here. So you would have an error column that kind of lists the problem that Paul has. And there's another nice feature that Paul can help you to find out what's going on. I can show this in a little bit. You can see other useful information, like when the last successful sync was happening, when the last attempted sync was happening, which operating system he's using. And as we had the question around devices, we can also see what type of device and what version of the sync client is actually trying to access this. So let's go on and talk a little bit about Sally from sales, because Paul obviously is very, very happy about his sync experience, and he told Sally, he was a department lead at sales, that he actually wants to that he actually is very happy about it. And so Sally thinks about all the regulatory compliance issues she has around data of her directs. And so she asks the IT administrator of Contoso to enable her department for work folders as well. So one of the core thoughts I have, in general you have, is you want to keep data separate. You can separately provision storage for each and every individual department. You can have departmentalized security groups that you can use to keep the users apart. So what we want to do for Sally is we want to create a new sync share. So the little task up here, new sync share, allows us to walk through a very quick wizard, which allows us to configure Sally's department for and everybody in there for synchronization. So the first screen allows us to either pick an existing SMB share, but on this PC or on this server, we don't have one for sales yet. So what we're actually going to do is we're going to create a new sync share, and I just quickly used dialogue for that. What? That's what I want to do. So I'm going to create a new folder for Sally. That's where I want to put it. And that's going to become my sync share. So on the next screen, if you're using offline folders or if you're using offline folders, all the subfolders of users are identified by their alias. If you're setting this up for the first time, we encourage you to use an alias and domain combination. And in any multi-domain scenario, this is probably helpful for you as well. So you basically get to pick how is the user's folder, what's the naming convention on a user's folder. So it's not all that difficult. In this case, we're just going to move ahead with the default. We call it the folder sales, so we're going to call the share sales. So the sync share is now going to be called sales as well. On this screen, we get to pick who has access to the sync share. So what I did in advance is I created a security group that contains all the members of the sales team. And all I have to do is basically reference that security group and add that to the list of permissions or of permitted security or users in this for the sync share. So let's advance to the next screen. This is the policy screen where you can enforce the policies that we talked about, like password protection, that the screen locks automatically, and that you can encrypt the data on the client at rest. So we're going to choose that too. We're going to advance to the next screen. It's a nice summary of what we've just chosen, and we're going to create it, and voila. There we go. Sally has her sync share, and as you can see, there's only Sally and one other person, so it's not going to be a huge crowd using this now, but just to iterate over the point how simple it is to empower a whole different set of people and the thoughts that you can put in provisioning the storage in the way you think. If you have hundreds or thousands of people, then you probably want to prepare for the amount of data that is about to come in. And so this very, in a very flexible way, fits into your general file server day-to-day tasks. With that, I'm going to give it back to Nia.
Excellent. Thank you, Fabian. And as you probably know, but I'm going to say it again, everything you see us doing through the server UI, you can use PowerShell to do. So the server UI is built on top of PowerShell, and everything there is PowerShell enabled, that you can do across multiple servers or one server, and you can automate. So we've come to the half point, and I want to make sure we all understand why you would use work folders and which scenarios you would use work folders. If you have, you know, if you want to use collaboration and you want to use sharing and you want to use cloud, we really recommend that you go with SkyDrive Pro. So I want to make that very perfectly clear. If you have a file server that you'd like to extend and you don't want to use SharePoint, you can use work folders to enable users to get their data on all their devices, which is a plus for the users. And you get the data on the back end so that you can make sure that the data is backed up, protected from leakage, and all the stuff that you already do with your existing file servers. So you make the choice, and you can use your file server, or you can use SharePoint. I'll be with you in a second. If you already have home folders or client-side caching, and you want to bring your the other devices that are not domain joined into the fold. So you want to enable your users to work from home on their devices, or you want to enable them to bring their iPad or their Surface and get their data there, then you can use work folders in combination with existing devices that are using home folders or client-side caching. So work folders enables the BYOD side of that scenario. So in these two scenarios, you can make the choice of using work folders. There was a question there. Sorry? So the question was, how does the client that's outside of the office work with work folders? Yeah. So the question was, what happens if the user, let's say we have the user is working on his device, changing the document, then, you know, disconnects the device from any network so that it doesn't sync, then goes to work, changes the document to another machine, like for example. So this would be a conflict resolution case, and we have very, very simple conflict resolution. The last file wins, and the other file gets a suffix of what device and what date it was changed on, so that the user can then go in and sees two files, and he can make a choice whether he wants to consolidate them or whether he wants to throw away the one of the files. So again, we keep it simple. We don't have like this all UI of how do you change things, like how do you deal with conflict resolution. We just give him the what we think is the right choice, and the user can choose what they want to do with it. All right. So you enabled work folders on the server, you're good to go, you have storage, you have everything, you have policies. How do you get work folders on devices? We showed you one example where the user initiates that action. So the user can go in and say, my email is nearby@microsoft.com. That's my real email if you want to send me emails. And gets automatically joined to work folders on this device. All is good. And that's it. Or let's say you don't have auto discovery, which requires the IT admin to do some things. If you don't have that, you can just send him the URL. So I put in the URL, let's say https://workfolders.microsoft.com. That connects to my work folder server. All is good. So these are the two options that you can use to initiate from the user side. You can, of course, also initiate it from the server side by using group policy. So you can use group policy for your on-prem devices, domain joined devices, and you can use group policy through Intune as well, so for your managed devices as well. So in both cases, you can use group policy. And the way you use group policy, we have two modes. There's the automatic mode, which I can tell you right now that maybe many people like, but I hate. So I don't know how about you. Who here has client-side caching and just logged in to just random computer and saw all his files there? Nobody did that. Okay, when I logged into like a server or something in Microsoft, I get all my files there. I hate that, you know, that, you know, I just think about how am I going to get it out of there. That's the automatic mode. So automatic mode says, okay, you logged into a machine, you get group policy, boom, you have all your files there. The opt-in mode is a bit different. And the reason I like it is that I asked the team to do it so that I don't get into the situation where, you know, I log in and all my files are there. I can choose. Now, I get a pop-up that says, do you want work folders here? And I can choose yes or no. And if I choose yes, I go through the experience. All the stuff is already configured for me, and I get my files on the device. So user-initiated, group policy. Group policy has the option to have the user opt-in so that it's not intrusive to the user. Any questions? Yes, please. There's no way I can hear you. So You want to come closer? Perfect question. I like that question. So we thought a lot about My Documents, whether we use that as the anchor point for work folders. So first of all, you can do that. My Document is just a pointer. So you can point My Documents to the work folders. However, we deliberately chose not to do it. We chose not to do it for the reason that I specified in the beginning, that we wanted to make sure that we have a solution that people know about, like SkyDrive, like Dropbox. And the reason you don't want to use documents, My Documents, it's very confusing. My documents at home are my personal data. My documents at work are, for me at least, are my work data. Now, if you start using My Documents, then I might be confused between home and work. So we really wanted to make it very clear where the work data goes to. And make it, you know, that kind of a solution already exists. People use it. It's very successful. We didn't see a reason to reinvent the wheel here. All right. Let's talk about security. Now, leakage prevention is very, very important for us. And I'm sure it's very important for you guys. And we want to take the opportunity to get that desktop data that's so vulnerable, that can be, you know, attached to emails, that can be just stolen, that causes a lot of leakage from any organization. We want to take the opportunity and better protect it. Now we have custody of it, we can better protect it. So first, of course, as we said, require password. If you want your work data here on this device, you need to have password with AutoLock and so on. We also have automatic encryption on the device. Now, this is using EFS, so it's local encryption. If you take the file and attach it to an email, that encryption is gone. Right? So we want to do something about that. And we'll talk about that in a second. Before we talk about that, all the communication between the client and the server is, of course, secure using HTTPS. You can terminate HTTPS on the reverse proxy if you want to, or you have to terminate it, but you can also, from the reverse proxy in, you can use HTTP, so you can monitor the data for intrusion detection stuff and so on. On the back end, we talked about authentication using, of course, Windows or ADFS, and that allows you to control who can sync their data. And on the server side, you can actually have the following characteristics of how you control this data. So one, administrators by default do not have access to the user's data. So not every file server administrator can just go in without maliciously changing security, which can be audited, to go and look at the data even. So you can't have this, oh, by mistake I looked at, you know, this specific project or I copied files from here. You can automatically classify the data to find keywords or phrases that or social security numbers that kind of raise a red flag and send an email to the user, you have some things that you shouldn't have here. You can automatically RMS protect it, so that if the user attaches the file to an email, it's still protected by that RMS protection. And that doesn't mean that automatically RMS protection, who knows what RMS is, Rights Management Services? Okay, so for the guys that don't know, it encrypts the file so that when somebody wants to open it, it goes, that somebody needs to go to the RMS server and authenticate with it, authenticate so they can get access to the file. And it encrypts the file in a way that has some policies such as, you know, you can't read it or you can't print it or you can't copy from it and so on. So it provides you that additional layer of protection. Now, who has RMS Rights Management Services deployed in the organization? Okay, that, as I expected, not many, but brave people. And one thing that if you go to the RMS session, you're going to learn about RMS online, which enables a lot of more people to deploy RMS so that you don't need to manage RMS. You can just use RMS online to deploy it and, again, prevent leakage from your organization. Now, one of the reasons that it's hard to use RMS is that users don't know that they need to encrypt their documents. Right? In Microsoft, we have RMS for many years now, but we don't use RMS as extensively because users don't know that they need to RMS protect some sensitive data. But the file server knows that. It can do that for you. So when I store a document, I use some early version of work folders. When I store a document on my laptop, it syncs to all my devices. But if it's a document about vNext, it's going to get RMS protected without me doing anything. It just happens on the file server on the backend and gets replicated to everyone. Now, it doesn't protect it to me only. It protects it to Microsoft full, Microsoft all employees. So it's not against someone. It's not against me sending an email to with a file to one of my colleagues. But if I send it outside of Microsoft to my accountant, he's not going to be able to open it. And I can also choose to remove that RMS protection. That's fine. If I chose deliberately to send it to my, not my accountant, to a lawyer outside of Microsoft so that he can view that this is something that, you know, he needs to do when I work with him, I can RMS, un-RMS protect it, so remove the encryption and send it to him. That's fine. Because I did that, and I'm audited about it, and I can send it out, and that's a completely legit business scenario. But it has to be intentional. So we seamlessly protect the document, and then if you want to unprotect it, you need to be intentional about it. So we kind of reverse that, these roles. When you have a virus on a document and you upload it to a service that doesn't do antivirus, that thing gets replicated to all your devices. That's not a good thing, right? You have file servers. On a file server, you can put an antivirus. And when that document hits the file server, we just delete it. So it doesn't get synced again and again. So we don't allow it to get to the user's folder. We stop it in the middle. The antivirus actually stops it when it gets uploaded to the file server into a staging area. And the file doesn't get replicated. It's still on the device. You didn't lose your information, so it's still on the device that doesn't have virus protection, apparently. So the user still has the data, but it's not replicating to all the other devices. And we didn't need to code a single line of code for that. It's just because it's all there. Like, all these technologies that I just described on the server side are all there. And they're used, and they've been used for years. That's the beauty about the way that we kind of approach this. It's just files on a folder for the user, and we use all the existing technologies to augment what you can do on the back end. Any questions? Okay. Yes. So the question was, is there, and I'm going to rephrase it a little bit, is there a way to do a read-only devices that only get the documents, but you're not able to change on them and sync it back? And that's a good question. That's the first time I hear about that scenario. It's a good scenario. We don't have that in the current release, but it's something we can consider. Anybody else find this scenario interesting? Okay, can you give me the reason why you want it? Got it. So the reason was that there are unprotected devices that you don't want people to, that might be malicious, to change it. And then it would get replicated to all other devices. Okay, it's a good scenario. We'll definitely add it to our list. Yes, please. Great question. You guys keep asking me about features that we want to add. So the question was about a generic web access to the file server, to the work folders. We have SMB access, of course. And you know, if you wanted to and you have the expertise, you can enable WebDAV. But a generic web access is something that we're thinking about as well. Great question. Yes, please. That's another great question about NTFS permissions. So we do use NTFS permissions as the base permissions to access. Now, you need to remember that this is the user's folder. So whenever we sync files, we act on behalf of the user. We use the user context. So if the user can't access his data, that's going to be a problem, right? It's only that user that can access this data. And we use NTFS permissions to implement that. Yeah, so the gentleman asked about the department access. And as I said, in this version, we didn't implement the department access. But absolutely, when we implement the department access, we are going to take into account the NTFS permissions. Yes, it's a great question. All right, so I think I talked about everything. And Fabian is going to dazzle us with a demo about protection.
Well, I don't know if I can dazzle you, but it's the point I'm trying to drive home with this little demo is how simple it is for Paul to protect a file without needing to do anything. So that's the simplest way of protecting a file is you don't have to do anything. The file server and you as IT administrators can take care of that in the background, and it's just applied to Paul's files. So there is like a by default security type of sense. So one of the core aspects I like about work folders is how much it actually integrates into all the existing feature sets and capabilities of file servers. So Nia mentioned quota, file screens, file classification, and if you take file classification and you combine it with RMS, you're going to get a very strong security story out of that. So what we did in the background is we have a file classification rule that's looking for certain keywords, or it can look for the signature of a social security number or other things. So in our case, we're looking for a certain keyword, says confidential. And when that happens, the server tries to protect the file. So on this little Office PC here, we see that Paul is working on a slide that actually contains information about a slide that you have seen already. So at some point, it actually was confidential, so it's not actually that far-fetched. So, and he wants to obviously use that on all his other devices too. So the place where he puts it is not on his desktop, but the place where he puts it is actually in his work folders. So keep a close eye on the size of that file over here. So what happens in the background, now that I have a confidential file or a file that triggers a certain classification rule, and that rule is combined with RMS, the file is being uploaded or synced to the server. The server runs the classification tool, identifies the file as having content that is worthy of protection. And you can see the size has changed slightly with a couple of more kilobytes back here. And if I'm going over to my, sorry, that was a stale image. If I'm going over to my Surface or to Paul's Surface, we can see the file has synced also to Paul's Surface. But if we're trying to open it here, it will now actually ask me for authentication because the Surface is not a domain joint device. I can't use Kerberos to authenticate. So in this case, I'm just going to have to speak and type. So on that is going to enable us to look at the file on the Surface. It's rights management, RMS protected. And I can see permissions here. Well, it's not very restrictive at the moment, but it gives you a sense of how simple it is to automatically add that layer of protection to utilize RMS. And if you don't want to deploy RMS in your enterprise, you can leverage RMS online, which is a great service that gets you up and running very, very quickly. And with that, I think we have seen that syncing a file is a very instant kind of action. It's also very quick in protecting files and keeping your files secure. And the same thing happens with file screens or any other file server resource management tool that you're using on your file server. So, oh, you had a question? Well, in this case,
So we're using, in this case, we're not using IDFS because we're using Digest as authentication.
Right.
There was another question there.
But
so this you get to see if you go either to the deep dive or you come afterwards and
You come to the booth.
Yeah.
Then we can go and walk you through.
Yeah, we can. We'll stay after that outside and just because we don't have time.
Yeah, we're at 8 minutes now, so
yeah.
Okay, I hurry up. So one of the other important protection scenarios is actually not about protecting a single file or protecting a file in a certain scenario. It's about protecting the protecting all of the files. And many of these, all the bring your own devices are mostly, because you can bring them, they're rather mobile. So what can happen is you can lose them or they can get stolen. So one of the things that you want to be able to say all the corporate data needs to be protected on that device. So we have it with the encryption at rest. We already talked about that. But there's also all mobile device management solutions offer a device wipe capability. And with the EFS protection Nia mentioned earlier, we're going to be able to separate the personal data from the corporate data, and we're going to be able to just wipe the corporate data off of our device. So with Intune, I can do that, but on my setup, I have not set up Intune to manage the device. What I'm going to do is I simulate the revocation of the encryption key. And that's basically the same API that any other mobile device management solution is going to call. So I'm just going to trigger that manually by running this little script. It basically destroys the access to all the encrypted files. So you can still see the files, but now if I'm trying to open this file, we're going to get an access denied message. All the files now sitting on this surface are inaccessible. Everything protected with your corporate key is now inaccessible. And we got strong feedback in the other TechEd session where we basically were asked to say, well, once the files are rendered useless, why don't you just go ahead and delete them? And I think that's something that we're going to look at for the final release to add to the product. But right now, the files are going to stay there, but they're safe and secure because they're encrypted to a way that it's not going to be very easy to. They're safe.
Thank you, Fabian. And by the way, I assume that the question that the gentleman asked other people is the same question. So what I suggest you do, you kind of load up the FSRM on the file server
I
talk about the
sounds good.
The other things. And then whoever wants to see it can just stay and we'll show it to everyone. Because there's half an hour between each of the sessions, so we'll have a few more minutes. All right. So you saw one server deployment. But there might be cases where you want to use multiple servers, multiple sync servers. A user can only sync to one sync server. So you would always go to the same sync server as a user. So what if you have a China branch office and a US data center? You might want the users that are in the China branch office to sync to their China location and the users that are in the US to sync to their US location. What happens if you have the sales department saying, we are not willing to share our data at all with the finance department or with the operation department? You want to really keep a wall between them. So you want to put the data on different servers. These kind of scenarios are scenarios that you need to deal with as the IT admin. Now, the challenges are very, very straightforward and simple. One is, how do I configure such an environment so that users go to the right server? And the second scenario is I need to keep it simple for the users. The second challenge, sorry, is that I need to keep it simple for the users and for myself. The last thing that we need to keep in mind is that what happens when someone moves from China to the US? How hard would it be to move all their data and all their settings to the US? So again, we're not going to go deep dive into that, but I want to show you the different options for multiple server configuration. First option is user-based. You give the user the URL. We talked about giving the user the URL, right? So let's say we have two servers, Sync 1, Sync 2, or three servers, Sync 1, Sync 2, and Sync 3. Sync 3 is in China, in the branch office. Sync 1, Sync 2 are local. You go ahead and tell the user, if you want to use, you send an email to all the folks in the China branch. If you all want to use, you know, work folders, here's the URL that you need to put in. Don't put in your email address. Just click to put in your URL. And we didn't show there's an experience to put a URL. Use that. You're going to sync to sync 3, and you're done. That works. It's a simple solution. I like simple solutions. However, it's not scalable, right? If users start moving around, you need to send them the right URL. If you want to move them around, you need to send them the right URL, and so on. Simple, but less flexible. But it would work, and you can use it. Another solution is to let work folders find the right URL automatically. Come on, move. Okay.
Doesn't want to.
I think I'm going to use page down. Yes.
There you go.
In this solution, the sync servers find the right location for the user. So the user comes in and uses a generic web address such as workfolders.contoso.com. Let's say I put in nearby@microsoft.com, I get directed to workfolders.microsoft.com. User gets there, hits one of the sync servers, depending on the proxy, let's say it always goes to sync one, just as an example, but it could go to sync one, sync two, or whatever. You can load balance this thing. Goes to sync one, sync one says, oh, you know, this is near, let me go and look in Active Directory in near's object and see which sync server it needs to go to. And then redirects me to the right sync server, in this case, sync three. So same example as before, we just let sync one server find out where it needs to go to. Now there's two things you need to do in order to enable that. So it's a bit of work for you guys. One is you need to add an attribute, which is a schema change for the user. Up to now we didn't touch ID at all. So this is a schema change because we have a new attribute to add to the user. For some it's simple, for some it can't be done. So for the guys that are simple, you can just add that. The second thing is that you need to populate that attribute with the right sync server for the user. The advantage that it gives you is that now when a user moves from one place to another, you just change this attribute, you change the user group so that it goes to the right, so that it belongs now to the right sync share, and you're done. The user is going to hit the old server. The old server is going to say, sorry, you're not mine anymore. And the user is going to retry the discovery and find the right server to go to and continue going to the right server from there on. Any questions? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. So the question was whether this attribute can be visualized. It's visualized in the attribute editor for the user. So if you go to user, there's attributes. That's it. There's no special, which like it's not promoted. It's part of all the other attributes. Good question. All right, so actually there's one key takeaway I'd like you to take. This is a problem that has a simple solution. You can solve the problem now, or when we release Server 2012 R2 with file servers, you can solve the problem now with SharePoint and SkyDrive Pro. It's your choice. We will help you do whatever you need to solve the problem of users using their data across all their devices while you keeping the compliance and leakage protection for this data. That's the end of the talk. Don't forget to give feedback. And remember, I told you, Fabian is the number one expert on workflow client UX, so don't say he doesn't know that. And let's go back to show you the server UI for how to set the RMS protection. So I'm going to quickly walk you through that. This is the File Server Resource Manager here. And on the File Server Resource Manager, in the classification tab, there is the classification rules. We have a classification rule that basically says, for this location, which is C work folders, apply classification of content classification and assign impact equals high to everywhere where you find a string of confidential. And you can see there's also regular expression. By the way, if you want to talk about classification, there is a talk about dynamic access control tomorrow morning that you're welcome to come and join. And then we also have a file management task that basically says, for the same scope of C work folders, apply action RMS protection with high impact template if the condition impact equals high. Now these two rules are running in what we call continuous mode. So as soon as the file hits the server, we kind of look at it and say, oh, it's high impact, let me go and RMS protect it. Okay, so this was a quick detour. Sorry about that to whoever was not interested. And basically, this is the end of our session. And feel free to give feedback, whatever you want. I was just kidding about Fabian. And there's a bunch of other sessions that are related that we encourage you to go and visit if you are interested in this.
Especially, we have a good hands-on lab that lets you walk through some of the deployment and configuration scenarios yourself. It's a rather quick study, but you're going to get a feel for it, and maybe that encourages you to just try that out at home and maybe see if you would like to deploy that in your organization.
We have run out of time. We're here afterwards, and we want to let the other presenters also come in and do their stuff. So thank you very, very much for being with us today, and have a great decade.